And you're listening to WHUS 91.7 FM. I am Fran Storch, and for the next hour, you will be hearing Radio Naturopath. I am here with my co-host, Ron Meniza.
Well, good morning, Fran. How are you today?
I'm pretty good. So let's see. So we wanted to get a little bit started. We had a caller just now who was interested, and if she could call back and tell us what town she was calling from and what her name was. We didn't happen to get that. And we would like to, because we like to know who you are and where you come from. But, I mean, we don't need extensive information about you, and that's fine. So she had a question about belly fat. I guess, what's up with that? What's up with belly fat? When you have it, what can you do with it? And I'm assuming that she wants to get rid of it. So I can certainly talk about that, why belly fat happens and all that. So it's interesting. So this is an interesting thing. You remember that Eve Ensler created a play called The Vagina Monologues, where she talked about where she got various women, snapshots, archetypes of different women to talk about, well, their vaginas. Because, you know, it's a thing that you don't talk about too much. It's something that carries a lot of pride and shame and a lot of controversy in our culture. Well, The Vagina Monologues is very, it's famous because it's used often as a benefit to help women who have been victims of sexual abuse. And so it is often presented around Valentine's Day. So Eve Ensler, that same person, also had another play where women talked about their bellies, because she realized she had a lot of issues around her belly, that women have round bellies. And women often hate their round bellies. Women have a lot of controversy and they have a lot of issues around their round bellies. And if you look at fashion magazines and if you look at fitness magazines, the ideal belly is flat. And there's a lot of pressure to get rid of belly fat. And if you look down at your belly and you see that it's flabby or there's more fat in it than you would like, it's often a source of at least annoyance and possibly shame. Some women are fine with their bellies, and you know there's some people who are body positive and they don't have an issue with their bellies, which is great. But it is really common for a lot of women to have a lot of issues and shame around their bellies. And I don't want to just shout this out to women. Men as well have issues around their bellies. And for men, it can be even more of an issue because of the male physique. The male physique, generally, they gain weight in their bellies first, and that is the place where it is most prominent, where many women have more and more even fat distribution. And so if you're more of a pear-shaped person, you may gain weight in your buttocks and your thighs and not so much in your belly. And you can be a larger, curvy woman and have a relatively flat belly. But if you're me, I'm one of those women who's apple-shaped. And when I gain weight, I gain it first in my belly. So
apple, huh?
So when you were talking to this woman, did she say, you said she wanted me to talk about belly fat. Did she say what she wanted to know about belly fat?
I think she probably is interested in, you know, everything about it. Like, how do you get belly fat? How do you get rid of belly fat? Why do you get belly fat? And, you know, I would just say generally that's what I would
talk about. So I think we're on a good start here. So first of all, attaining that absolutely flat belly for men and women is an ideal, and it is about perfection, and it is not possible for a lot of people, especially the older you get. So,
and if you've had children.
Oh, my goodness.
That's another one.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Well, so one of the things I want to put out there is if you're aspiring to have a fat belly and that's your goal, I'm going to very kindly question that goal. Because to me, as your loving, friendly, naturopathic physician, I'm more interested in you being happy and healthy than worrying about how flat your belly is. I mean, my belly is not flat. I don't know if it will ever be flat. In order for my belly to be flat, I would really, really have to ramp down my carbs. Because as I told you, I'm an apple-shaped person. I have narrow hips. My hip bones are relatively narrow. When I gain weight, you see it in my belly first. I don't have a very big butt. You know, I'm a little unusual because I'm not a pear. When I gain weight, you see it in my belly. When I'm very large, it looks like I'm pregnant. That's how much I gain weight in my belly. And that's probably because I'm genetically not programmed to gain it so much in my hips and my thighs. If you look at my mother, she looks like that too. She's not very curvy. We're kind of the Storch women, Storch Rothbaum, well, in my family anyway, we're kind of straight, you know.
Probably that German background.
I don't know.
Or something, maybe.
I don't know. It's just how we are. Well, look at Stephanie. Stephanie's my friend Stephanie is very curvy.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's Eastern European Jewish, and she's very curvy. And we're Eastern European Jewish, and we're kind of straight. And it's maybe true that there's some, the image of the Eastern European Jewish short, stout woman, they're not very curvy. They tend to gain weight in the belly.
Right.
And Stephanie is not like that.
And if you look back at some of the old paintings from the masters, it was like a cool thing. If you see any of the nude paintings from the masters, it was like that was an attractive thing.
That's right. The Rubens specifically.
We've just redefined things in our culture.
Well, right now, it used to be, you're absolutely right. That's an excellent point that over time, fashion changes and what's fashionable will change, and culturally things differ around the world. So whatever is rare and prized is usually what the fashion is. So in places where there's a scarcity of food, being healthy and large and chubby is considered beautiful.
Because it's
it's hard to attain.
Sure, it's hard to get there.
That's right. So in this culture, food is abundant, and even if you're poor, you can go to the food pantry and get food. And if you're poor and you don't have a lot of money, you can go to you can get inexpensive food, and the inexpensive food, the food that's subsidized, tends to be starchy, high carbohydrate, and food that will make you fat.
It makes you large.
Makes you gain weight. Mm. So that's the unfortunate thing. I mean, there are people who figure it out. They figure out ways to get SNAP benefits and go to food pantries where they do provide produce, or to make deals with CSAs. And there are food, like the Willimantic Food Co-op takes SNAP benefits, so you can go there with subsidies. And I believe also the Storrs Farmers Market takes food subsidies. So that's something to look at too. But in this culture, in American culture, and in cultures around the world now where food is relatively abundant, in cultures where food is plentiful, it's fashionable to be thin. And thin changed over time. So what Ron was talking about, the Rubens beauties, the art was one example of an artist who had those paintings where the women were very buxom and they had big bottoms and they had big bellies as well, and that was considered to be very attractive. And that's not really in fashion now. And then you have the 60s before the 60s, in the 40s and 50s, people were trim, but they weren't skinny. And then when the 60s came around, especially later into the 60s, you started to have models like Twiggy, who was very thin, and being very thin became very popular. And then beyond that, in the 70s, 80s, you had Kate Moss, who was also very thin. And these women were thin, and they were not curvy. They were not muscular. They were not fit-looking. They were simply thin. And so that was something that people aspired to, and it was very hard. And so in the 60s and 70s, you started seeing women actively trying to diet and lose weight, and you could buy supplements that would help you to lose weight. And then Weight Watchers became popular. And so, you know, the diet weight industry was born.
But Twiggy was emaciated. She didn't look good at all.
Well, and the thing is, if that is held as a standard, if all the fashion magazines are showing Twiggy, and it's very hard to aspire to that, what do you think's going to happen in a capitalist society?
Well, yeah, I know.
People are going to spend money constantly trying to attain that.
Right.
And it's awful to feel shame. It's really one of the things that's really hard, because I've been fat and I've been thin and I've been sort of in between. And right now I'm sort of in between. It's a really tough thing to look.
Are you happy?
Right. It's a really tough thing to look in the mirror and see a shape that you don't like and see that you're overweight and realize that you really, really don't want to be overweight, because there's a lot of emotions come up. Some of the emotions that come up are self-loathing. Some that come up are frustration. Some that come up are anger. And the reality is you take a look at that body that's maybe 10 or 20 pounds or more overweight, and you can't fix it tomorrow. It's not going to be gone in a week. So if you have a cold, you can do an antibiotic. Even if you have a bad bronchitis, you can go to the doctor. The doctor can give you some medicine. You can take some rest. And within a week or so, you're going to be done with that bronchitis. If you're overweight, not only won't it be gone next week, but it's something you have to be vigilant about over all the time. And it's something that you, I mean, you can work really, really hard and not lose weight. So because, as my buddy Jay Tita says, weight loss is neither fair, predictable, nor consistent. It's not fair and it's not predictable. So you can do everything right. You can follow a diet program precisely. You can follow an exercise program precisely and gain weight next week. So Ron makes a good point. Are you happy? That's a great question. Because if you're happy, it doesn't matter so much. And even if you have lots of weight to lose, it's more important to be happy than it is to be trying to lose weight. And that's something I try to tell people. Now, getting back to belly fat. So one of the first things to say, if you are looking down at your belly and you don't like what you see, the first thing to do is to transform that. Don't hate your body. It's a losing battle. It's really not good for you. Your body is your body. It's what you have, and you can't change the fact that you're in the body that you're in. You're in the skin that you're in. So love your body no matter what your size is, what your shape is, what you look like. No matter if you have 100 pounds to lose or 10 pounds to lose. The thing is, if you focus on that, it's going to make you nuts. It's not useful. And it's not useful to be really hard on your body. It's much more useful to be really good to your body. And so even if you're somebody who works very hard doing athletics, in order to be able to work really hard on those athletics, you have to also be able to rest and be really kind to your body. So like next week, I'm going to have a lactic threshold test done.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yes. A nice man is coming to our house, and he's going to test my lactic threshold.
Is it someone I know?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool.
So right. Big shout out to Aaron Russ.
Yay, Aaron.
Yeah. So anyway.
You're going to get a little ear prick.
I know.
Yeah,
so one of the things that I have to do, guess what I have to do on Wednesday afternoon?
But it's Wednesday afternoon.
Yes. So if he's gonna come at 8 o'clock at night. So what should I be doing from say noon to 8 o'clock?
Well, gee, I'm not exactly sure what the setup is for that. I don't know.
How about nothing?
Oh, okay. Nothing is good.
Lying about.
You're going to get on a trainer, and you're going to
go,
you know,
full bore.
You're going to go part bore until you eventually get to full bore. But
yeah.
He's going to tell you when you get there.
Yes.
He's going to tell you at what point you're going to get there, and
they're going to
monitor your heart rate.
That's right.
In the process of
yes.
this too. In a perfect world, it'd be great if they could monitor your wattage output too. But
he's gonna.
Oh, he does. He
yes.
has a way of monitoring your
yes.
wattage too.
Yes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he's going to bring that over.
Is he bringing the trainer with him?
No, we need to bring the trainer and the bike, and he's going to bring the compute trainer. Yeah.
Yeah, he's bringing a trainer then.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he has to have a way of monitoring your wattage output.
Yes, he's
so
going to do that.
So we don't have that at our house.
No, right. That's
okay.
correct.
Okay.
So he's going to bring that.
Yep.
Yeah. So, in order for him to measure that, I have to lay about and rest.
Mm-hmm.
My body's not perfect. I'm not at like racing weight right now. And in order for me to choose to be at racing weight, I would have to choose to eat, you know, very little sugar and not enjoy myself so much. Yes. What would you like to say?
Are you racing?
No.
Then you don't need to be at racing weight.
However, I'm going to do some time trials. I do want to get a little bit faster. And I just want to train sensibly. I don't want to just go out and go as hard and fast and far every single time I ride. I want to do hard days, easy days, Some days I do short and hard. Some days I do longer. I want to enjoy myself and I want to perform. So it's important to do hard and easy days. Okay, so getting back to that belly fat.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you gain weight in your belly? Well, you gain it there because it's accessible to your organs to do stuff with. That's why. So if it's right there, it's available for energy. There must be a survival advantage to putting fat on at that point. Now, if you have inflammatory fat that's curving around your organs and that's sitting there, then that can be a problem. And unfortunately, because of the 21st century North American lifestyle, we do tend to get belly fat and we get visceral fat and fat that tends to envelop our organs. So the thing is that fat is not dead tissue. Fat has compounds in it. It stores toxins for us. It will pull toxins away from out of your circulation and store it for us so it's not in your circulation. And fat also contains inflammatory compounds. So if you have a lot of fat on you, you're going to have more inflammatory compounds, especially if you gain the weight by not getting regular exercise and by eating too much and by usually eating too much carbohydrate. But if that's how you're gaining your weight, by not exercising and eating too much, you're going to put on belly fat and you're going to get visceral fat. And that visceral fat, unfortunately, is inflammatory. So it's a problem, and it's a problem for men and women. Now, you've seen sumo wrestlers, right?
Sure.
So sumo wrestlers do this interesting thing. Sumo wrestlers are extremely fit. They're very strong and they're very fit and they're very fat, right?
They're very large.
But sumo wrestlers, as fit people, they don't have visceral fat. Their fat is mostly subcutaneous. So subcutaneous fat is harmless. It doesn't envelop your organs. It's just there for use, and they do use it. And they don't have visceral fat like we do. Like people who don't exercise. Their fat isn't toxic to them. Unfortunately, when you have visceral fat increases your risk of cardiovascular disease, and increases your risk of all kinds of disease. Unfortunately, it makes you more likely to have blood clots, and it makes you more coagulable, and it makes you more likely to have all kinds of illnesses that related to free radical damage, even cancer. So it is a good idea to try to get rid of visceral fat. Now, mind you, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to exercise 24/7. What it does mean is to go on a program where you're eating sensibly and you're eating healthfully and you're getting regular exercise. And regular exercise can be walking. It has to be something. Because what I see with most people is they don't prioritize exercise. They don't prioritize movement at all. And that's the problem. It doesn't matter what you do as long as you do something. And something is way better than nothing. So get into the idea of belly fat. So when a woman is younger, when a woman's still cycling and still menstruating and still in her childbearing years, if she gains a lot of weight in her belly, it's probably genetic. Because like I said, some women don't tend to gain as much in their bellies. They gain it in their hips and thighs. And in some case their breasts, but some women like me, well, we tend to gain it in our bellies, and that's simply genetic. Now, if you're a person, so there's some tweaks to that. If you're very athletic, like if you've been very athletic from a young age, especially been athletic from, you know, those UConn basketball players, if you look at those lovely UConn basketball players, they're not curvy, are they?
No, not at all.
No, their bodies are pretty straight. Mm-hmm. And that's, if you look at them, they don't have most of that. I can't think of a basketball player who has an hourglass figure. Can you?
Not really, no.
No.
No, they have athletic bodies.
That's
right.
They're
very different. Yeah.
So the reason that happens is because if you start exercising at a young age, and those girls started exercising when they were, what, four?
When the ball would bounce.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. And they had a way of making it bounce. That's when they would start exercising.
Exactly. So yep. What happens there is when you are exercising, whether you're doing resistance training or whether you're doing cardio training, or in their case, they're doing short burst training, and a lot of it is some of it is cardio, and some of it is resistance training. In any case, you're going to favor cortisol and you're going to favor androgens. And so these girls from a young age, they're favoring those hormones. And so some girls, they delay the start of their cycles because they're so physically active. And when you exercise a lot, you're relatively in high cortisol. So cortisol is a hormone that controls your fight or flight. And cortisol doesn't care if you're running away from a bear, if you're running away from invading marauders. It doesn't care if you're writing a term paper or meeting a deadline at the office or meeting your numbers for your sales for the month. It doesn't care.
Oh, don't remind me. It's the end of the month.
I know. And so cortisol comes out to play, and cortisol wants to get you from here to there, wants to get you out of danger. So what cortisol does, when you're in high cortisol, it's not a good time to be reproducing. So your sex drive is going to go down and your sexual function isn't going to be as helpful. So cortisol is suppressive to sex hormones. It's suppressive to testosterone, estrogen, and progesterone. And so you're not going to be able to have a proper cycle, because if you're running away from invading marauders, it's not a good time to get pregnant. And that's your body, nature wants you to survive. And it wants you either to survive by running away from invading marauders, or it wants you to survive by reproducing, but it doesn't want you to do both at the same time. So if you got the hormones to run away from invading marauders, you're not going to be able to reproduce, because it's not safe for you to be pregnant, because when you're pregnant, you grow big and you can't move, and you have to be in a safe place and a safe time in your life in order for that to happen, which is why some of you women listening to this, you know that if you're trying to get pregnant and you've had difficulty and you waited till you were older and you're very stressed out and you have a high-stress job, that you're going to have a difficult time conceiving. That's definitely something that can happen. And so stress is not compatible with reproduction. I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm saying it makes it much harder. The stress hormones supersede reproductive hormones. And so when you look at athletes, people who have been athletes from an earlier age, there is some degree of suppression of the reproductive hormones because they're always running around and they're in relatively high cortisol. And if they're doing short sprinty stuff and resistance training, they're going to be relatively androgen dominant, not extremely, but unless they have polycystic ovarian syndrome, but they'll be somewhat androgen dominant. So you're going to see girls who are athletes be less curvy. That's what you're going to see. And they're not going, because their estrogen is suppressed. So they're not going to get as much breast development. They're not going to get as much hip and thigh development, and they're going to tend to be straighter. And so when they gain weight, they're going to tend to gain weight in their bellies as well, because that's more of an androgenic pattern. I don't want to say it's a male pattern. It's what happens when you do that. So when you see athletes, they tend to be less curvy. So that's an interesting thing. If you're very athletic and then you're worried about gaining weight, you're going to tend to gain it in your belly. That when you do gain weight, you're going to gain it in your belly. You're going to gain it in that androgenic pattern. So that's kind of interesting. So when you're under stress all the time, when you're under a lot of stress, and stress is a thing for you, you're going to tend to store fat in your belly. Because when you're in high cortisol, what happens is cortisol wants to, it thinks that you're in danger. So what it wants to do is help you to break down substances so that you have energy so you can get from here to there. And so it puts more sugar into your blood. And if you haven't been eating and you don't have enough sugar, it's going to look for something else, like protein. And you're going to go into, I think we talked about this last week, gluconeogenesis. So you're going to make sugar from your protein. Because if there ain't no sugar in your body, nobody happy. Yeah, ain't nobody happy with no sugar. All right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Sure.
Your brain can't function without sugar. So I'm not saying that means you should eat a high-carb diet. I'm saying that your body needs glucose. It needs the right amount of glucose, and when we see people eating these excessively carbohydrate-heavy diets and not exercising, then they gain weight. It's because they're not using the excess carbohydrates. But you do need, you always need some. And if you go on a very low carbohydrate diet, unless you are able to teach your body to burn fat as a fuel and use ketones as a fuel, you're not going to feel good. Your brain's not going to be right. And when you have sudden drops in blood sugar, you don't feel well. People who are diabetic, for example, if their insulin goes too high and their sugar is too low and their insulin drops, they'll go into insulin shock. Likewise, when you bonk on a bike ride or hit the wall on a run, those are the proper terms, right? You're in a crisis where you've run out of glycogen and your blood sugar is low and your body, for whatever reason, hasn't grabbed onto fat to burn it. And your body's like crying for sugar. It's fine for blood sugar. And your brain is crying for blood sugar as well. And so when you are in that high cortisol situation, your body is going to put sugar into your blood. So if you use the sugar, great, you're going to tend not to gain as much weight. But if you don't use the sugar, your body's going to store it as fat. And the first place it stores fat that's there as a result of high cortisol is your abdomen. And that happens to both men and women. So you'll see cyclists who tend to gain weight, whether they're men or women, they tend to gain it in their belly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where they tend to gain it because the sport, you're in high cortisol. And you'll see that more in recreational cyclists. You really won't see that in the professional cyclists because they're functioning at such a high level that that just doesn't happen. So the other thing is, so let's get into menopause for a minute here. So when you're younger, you'll gain belly fat if you're under stress and you're suppressing your hormones. When you're in perimenopause or menopause when you're a woman, then your estrogen progesterone are going down. Something happens when you're in menopause or perimenopause, and that's that your estrogen progesterone are going down. Estrogen and progesterone stimulate a hormone called hormone-sensitive lipase. And listen to the word, lipase. Lipase means it breaks down lipids. Lipids are fats. So hormone-sensitive lipase is stimulated by estrogen and progesterone, and you have less of those when you're in peri and postmenopause. And so you don't have this advantage that you had when you had the estrogen and progesterone around. It's harder to burn fat at that time. The other thing that happens in perimenopause and postmenopause is your progesterone goes down. Your progesterone also goes down if you're under stress, no matter what age you're at, because progesterone has an easy two-step conversion to become, guess what, cortisol. Hmm. And again, your body doesn't want you to reproduce and being running away from danger at the same time. So it does this neat thing where progesterone, which is a hormone that maintains pregnancy, can be converted to cortisol so you can run away from the bear and also so you cannot get pregnant because, by the way, there are lots of bears coming and you have to run away from them. So if you have progesterone around and you're meeting a deadline, you have a stressful job, you have kids in a commute, whatever your deal is, if you're running, whatever progesterone you make, a lot of it's going to be converted to cortisol, which is going to bring you estrogen dominance and it's going to bring you sore breasts and PMS and irritability. Because when you're estrogen dominant, those are things you feel. And you're estrogen dominant when you have relatively more estrogen than progesterone. And that progesterone can be taken and turned into cortisol. Cortisol puts sugar into your blood. If you're not burning it off, you're going to gain weight in your belly. And then guess what else happens? Progesterone also stimulates thyroid function. So if you're stressed and you're taking that progesterone and turning it into cortisol, you don't have as much available progesterone and you become functionally hypothyroid. You may or may not be numerically hypothyroid, frankly, empirically hypothyroid, where we measure your thyroid hormones and see that the numbers are off. But your thyroid will not work as well when you're under stress, regardless if you're genetically hypothyroid. And your thyroid slows down when you get older, when you're in peri and postmenopause, because peri and postmenopausal women are functionally hypothyroid. That's part of how we gain weight, because we don't have the progesterone to push the thyroid function in this to the same degree. Now, is all lost? Well, all is not lost for a couple of reasons. One, like I said, we have this value on having a tummy that's like a drum. And that's not possible for most people. So I love Byron Katie. Byron Katie is great. She has the four questions, and I'm not talking about Manish Dana. Why is this night different from all other nights? I'm talking about the four questions. Is it true? Can you be absolutely certain that it's true? How do you feel when you think that thought? Who would you be if you dropped that thought? Can you think of one stress-free reason to think that thought? And I'm not asking you to drop it. And then turn it around. So Byron Katie, with the work, the four questions, she teaches us to refrain from arguing with reality. If most people have difficulty having a flat belly like a drum, and only a very few people can do it, why are we aspiring to something that only a very few people can do? What's the point? And even if you want to lose weight to be healthy, why aspire to have a flat belly like a drum? Those kinds of aspirations, I don't think are useful for most people. Also, the other thing I want to throw out there is, in my experience of myself and of my patients, I have patients who come in and they want to go on a plan. They want to go on a program. They want to do Whole30. They want to do a paleo cleanse. They want to do a cleanse of some kind. They want to go on, name your very strict diet, whatever it is. They want to go on that. And that's what's going to jumpstart them and get them on the path to health. And if they can just stick to that, they're going to lose weight and all will be well. I don't think I've ever seen anyone go on a strict program, whether it's Whole30, paleo, HCD diet, you name it, and stick to it all the time. In fact, most people stay on those for a while and they stop. Maybe they go off and they go on, but nobody sticks with it. If something is strict, they don't stick with it. And that is just generally what I see. So one of the things to look at, that's why I'm saying I'm bringing it all back to love yourself as you are today. I'm not saying don't take care of your health. I'm saying love yourself as you are today, because today is really all you got. You don't know what's going to happen in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. If you are thinking about, I'm looking at myself and I don't want myself to look like this. I want to look like what I think I'm going to look like in the future. That's called anxiety. If you're worried about what you looked like in the past when you were small and thin, that's called depression. So it's and when you are satisfied and happy with what's going on right now, that's called happy. So it's much more useful to be happy with what you got. So having said that, what if your doctor has said to you, wait, you have way too much belly fat, you've probably got some visceral fat, you want to work on losing it. So the first thing to do is like they said in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe, the first rule of Hitchhiker's Guide is don't panic. So don't panic, that's good advice. Don't think you have to lose all this weight yesterday. Because guess what? You can't. And if you try to go on a drastic calorie-reduced or carb-reduced or whatever diet where you lose lots and lots of weight really fast, not only won't it stick, but it's bad for you. The faster you lose weight, the more likely you are to get gallstones, for example, because you're losing too much fat all at once and the bile can't handle all the fat that's coming off you. And so you're more likely to get gallstones.
And it seems like the faster you lose weight, the faster it comes back on.
That's right. That's true.
That's not good.
Well, and the thing is, if you lose it really fast by extreme means, you usually can't sustain anything extreme. When we do intervals, do we sustain intervals for extended periods?
We try not to.
We try not to, right. And no. What happens to people who sustain very high levels of activity for a long time?
Well, they eventually break down.
They break down. Mm. And who do I worry about? The Iron Mans. Yeah. The Iron People. I worry about them because they put their bodies through so much. It's really tough on a body.
Torture to the body.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't be a triathlete or you shouldn't be an Ironman if that's what you really want to do. But in the long run, speaking strictly physiologically, is that really that good for you? Creates a lot of inflammation. It creates a lot of tissue breakdown. It's not that great for you. So if you're worried about your belly fat, like I said, the first thing to do is don't panic. The second thing to do is to look at what you're doing now. What are you doing now? Are you doing some things now that are contributing to belly fat? Are you exercising at all? if you're not exercising at all, it's probably a good idea to exercise some. And what's the best exercise for you? The best exercise for you is the one you'll do. I did that at a talk. I went around the room and said, what's the best exercise? And I pointed at different people, and they kept saying walking, swimming, riding a bike,
right,
dancing. Finally, somebody in the middle of the room said, whichever one you want to do. And I said, that's it.
And all the right answer.
All of the things you guys said is fine. And if that's the one you want to do, that's great. And also remember, you don't have to do one. You could do different things. You can mix it up. It's fine. You also have to remember that only 30% of fat loss is from exercise. 70% of fat loss is in the kitchen. So you really do have to work on your diet. Exercise is only so helpful. However, when you look at the habits of people who lose and keep weight off, one of their habits is that they get regular exercise. And I will tell you that it is easier for me to keep fat off from getting regular exercise, because regular exercise amps up your metabolism. You put on more muscle mass, so your body is more metabolically active. You have more energy. And guess what? You're also able to eat more. You can get away with eating more. Not a whole lot more, because if I get much over 2,000 calories a day, I gain weight and I just don't feel it. My body can't process that many calories. I know yours can, but mine can't. So
we're all different.
I have to keep it, for most of the time, I have to keep it under 2,000 calories. And so, but I can eat 18, I can eat 19. If I've done a metric, if I'm riding my bike very hard, maybe one day a week, I can eat that many calories, but my body just can't process food that fast. My metabolism is a lot slower than yours. And now I've got menopause. So of course I've got the menopause 10, and the menopause 10, if you talk to any menopausal lady, we'll all tell you, and I gained it right here. And we're all pointing to our bellies. That's where you gain it. Why do you gain it there? Because you're now more cortisol dominant, and you don't have the estrogen and progesterone like you did, where it's going to distribute it on your thighs and your buttocks. And you have more cortisol relative to those other hormones. So if you're eating any starch and sugar, when you eat too much starch and sugar, you tend to deposit more in your belly. And so there are ways around that. So what you have to do, like I said, you have to get some kind of exercise. The kind of exercise that's going to burn fat. Now, fat comes off, fat will come off where you genetically tend to lose fat. Now, there's some things I've been reading online about pocket obesity, and this is an interesting concept. So I've been reading a little bit about this, and the idea of pocket obesity is that you have spots of fat on your body that they call their dead tissue. There's no circulation going to the tissue, and it's a lot harder to lose weight there. So there's a suggestion that if you increase IGF-1, insulin growth factor 1, that will help you to reduce pocket obesity. That helps you to burn and metabolize pocket obesity. So how do you increase IGF-1? Well, the best way, I guess it's not rocket science. Best way to increase IGF-1, wait for it, is resistance training and interval training.
There you go.
Yep. And that's it. And there are some things you can eat that will help to increase IGF-1. Now, if you're diabetic or pre-diabetic or, type 1, type 2, you have to be careful of that, because if you increase your IGF-1 too much, it can mess with your insulin control, because it pushes insulin, like growth factor 1, will increase your insulin. And increasing your insulin momentarily while you're trying to add muscle mass to your muscles is not a bad thing. But if you have blood sugar dysregulation issues, like you have, you're diabetic or pre-diabetic, having too much IGF-1 around can be problematic. But increasing it a little bit, given that you don't have those conditions, can be helpful. And increasing it in a healthful way by either eating foods that increase your IGF-1 somewhat, or also getting short burst interval activity. And resistance training helps to do that. And then when you're doing cardio, short burst cardio. So when you're doing cardio intervals, that really helps, because short burst intervals will increase your mitochondrial function. They'll increase your androgens, and you'll actually gain muscle mass from doing that. And when you look at Allyson Felix versus name your favorite marathon runner, who's a great marathon runner? Joan Benoit.
Joan Benoit Samuelson.
Yeah, right. Okay. You look at the two of them.
Greta Weitz.
One's very slender and one's buff. Mm-hmm. And so Allyson Felix does short burst activity. So she's got a lot of muscle mass on her. In order to do those sprints, you have to spend a lot of time in the weight room. Plus doing the sprints themselves put muscle mass on you. And I find myself, because I do, you know, on the bike, I'm trying to focus less on long rides and do more short burst activities like time trials and, you know, intervals, that I've put on a little more muscle mass.
Mm-hmm.
That my poor tuchus, which I don't have a genetically shapely tuchus, it's got mildly more shapely as it can get for me.
You have a small wattage cottage instead of a large wattage cottage, right?
Yeah, I do too.
I have a little tiny butt, but you know, what do you do with it?
You climb hills.
Yeah, you climb hills.
Yeah.
So you know, you go where your strengths are,
and yet. My strength, I'm not so much, I'm an okay hill climber. I'm more of a wattage person.
Yeah.
I'm not a great wattage person either. I'm sort of in the middle.
You're an all around.
I'm kind of an all around.
You're an all around.
I'm an okay climber and an okay sprinter. Right, because my body type is sort of in the middle.
Well, we've never really worked on your sprinting.
Right, and if we did, it might be
We've never really explored that.
Right.
You know, and we could. If you want to explore it, we could explore
it. Right.
I could add that into your training regime.
Yeah. Right. But to get really good at sprinting, I would have to do probably even less long rides than I'm doing. Yeah.
Well, not necessarily.
Okay.
I mean, you know, you can the best sprinter I knew from our area, who we were just Facebooking this the other day because he mentioned coming around the corner and down the hill by Ron Meniz's house, so I got popped on Facebook, is Dave Geisert.
Oh.
And Dave is, he's a guy who, you know, he can go out and ride 100 miles anytime.
Yeah.
But he also was the best sprinter in his time period
that
there was in Connecticut and actually in New England. He was very, very good. And his favorite sprint, and this is why it was mentioned, was the boat launch sprint.
No kidding.
What he would do is he would wind it up just before you come around the corner heading towards the boat launch going by Pat and Meg's house.
Yes.
As you know where that is. As you're just coming out of the trees, that's where he would unload it and he would sprint to the driveway of the boat launch.
Oh.
Because it's slightly downhill, so it gives you an extra added boost. It's like getting shot out of a cannon.
Sure.
And I don't know that there's very many people that were ever able to beat him.
Wow.
It's kind of amazing.
I wonder if it's a Strava segment.
There were a couple of claims, but he said he gave them to him because he was younger and he needed the encouragement.
So if you're a person who's looking to work on your body fat, like I said, and you're looking to work on your belly fat, reducing carbohydrates is a thing. And if you're eating too many starchy carbohydrates tend to be the worst thing for belly fat. It doesn't mean you should eat none. It means that right now you're probably eating too much. And it doesn't mean, and so you have to look overall at your diet and how and what you're eating. So most people that I see don't eat enough produce. They don't, and so adding produce wherever you can. Having less carby things for breakfast, having some protein with your breakfast. Whatever protein you like is fine. If you like to do protein shakes, if you like to do eggs, if you like to do some dairy, you have to be careful with dairy because dairy is an interesting animal. Well, it's not an animal.
Well,
it comes from an animal.
It comes from an animal.
Because casein and whey increase insulin. So if you do too much, if you rely too much on dairy, it can sabotage your fat loss because casein and whey increase insulin. Now, if you have a whey protein shake right after a hard workout, that's a good thing because it's going to help you replenish your muscle mass. But if you're having significant dairy throughout the day and you're trying to lose weight, it can sabotage your fat loss, not just because of something about calories, but because think about what dairy is. Dairy was created to help little babies grow and grow a lot and rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you overeat a food that was designed by nature to help little babies grow from a little small thing to a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old or whatever,
right.
Name your animal. right?
Right. Exactly.
So, and to the point, whey and casein, the two proteins that are in dairy, stimulate insulin, that they make your insulin rise.
Right.
And having that happen right after you've done a hard workout and you want to rebuild muscle mass is a good thing. But having that happen consistently all the time when your form of exercise is, well, I'm trying to get in a program of walking, but I didn't get around to it this week. Maybe not so much.
Yeah.
So what we tend to say is lots of produce. And by produce, we mean produce that has less carbohydrate in it. So non-starchy vegetables. Those are going to be your leafy greens, your onions, your garlic, radishes, and things like your cruciferous, like broccoli and cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, any green you can think of, any herb you can think of. Those are all non-starchy vegetables. And then your less sweet fruits. And those are going to be fruits that tend to grow at these latitudes. So not so much tropical, although I won't exclude all tropical, because grapefruit, lemon and lime are fine. You can eat those with a bin. You can consider those as your less sweet fruits because they are less sweet. Oranges doesn't mean you can't eat oranges. It means that you eat them in moderation. But berries and cherries and apples and pears, you can eat a lot more of those because those things are high in flavonoids. They grow at these latitudes. And why is it important that they grow in these latitudes? Well, something that grows at this latitude does well in this climate. Something that is going to do well in this climate is going to have a nutrient profile that suits the animals that it's eating in this climate. So it's going to have an appropriate amount of sugar and water and carbohydrate and nutrients that are going to help you survive in this climate. So your berries and cherries are great. Berries and cherries and apples and pears, they grow great in this climate. Even peaches, to an extent, in season, those are fine. So citrus. Now, citrus doesn't grow in this climate, and yet lemon and lime and grapefruit have some really nice properties to them. Oranges are sweeter, and they're technically really too sweet for this climate. And when you eat them in this climate, I suggest moderation. Oranges are not something I would eat five of in a day. But oranges, if you want to have one small orange in a day as a part of a fat loss program, it's probably okay. It depends on you. It depends on how well you tolerate them. Lemon and lime I really like because they're almost not sweet at all. They clear mucus, they're detoxifying. And the thing with citrus is citrus has bioflavonoids in it, which are anti-inflammatory and has very absorbable bioavailable vitamin C, which is going to be good for all sorts of stuff. It's going to be good for your immune system. It's going to be good for strengthening collagen. It's going to be good for strengthening your muscles. It's going to be good for strengthening a lot of things. It makes it so that you have less allergy symptoms. And the bioflavonoids are similar, that they're going to help you in a similar fashion. So I'm not anti-citrus. And I know that when I go to Florida and I have local fresh oranges, they taste so good and they're really good for you. And in that situation, I eat oranges every day. So up here, it's better to focus on, local and fresh is ideal. And if it's not fresh, it could be stored, but things that grow in these latitudes, so the less sweet fruits are going to be your, like I said, your berries and cherries, your apples and your pears. And then nuts and seeds, if you tolerate them, not everybody tolerates them. Those still should be eaten in moderation because you can get into a calorie situation with nuts and seeds. But they do have a lot of fat and a lot of fiber and very low carbohydrate. And so they can help you, to feel satisfied if you eat them in moderation, and they have some good nutrients in them as well. And then of course, protein. So protein, I tend to tell people eat as much protein as you like, and you hope that people will self-regulate on that because, if you have 200 calories of chicken and you have 200 calories of corn chips, which one do you think you're going to be able to down easily? So it's going to take you more time to down that chicken breast, right?
Right.
And after you eat the chicken breast, you're probably not going to want another chicken breast.
You'll probably be more satisfied.
Much.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Whereas you have 200 calories of corn chips, you're ready for another 200. It's like same thing with pizza.
Well, it's the salt and the sugar that draws you in.
Well, it's salt. Well, it's the salt. It's really the carbs and the carbs and the fat.
Really?
Yeah. Because fat and carbs together turns on this hormone called neuropeptide Y, which makes you want to eat and eat and eat and eat. It turns off your satiety signals.
Oh, boy.
So when you have fat and sugar or fat and starch together, you can't feel that you're full. So that's why pizza is so dangerous.
I see.
Yes, pizza and ice cream. You know, things that people can eat tons of, and they're super high-calorie foods,
right.
And people can eat a lot of them. Like,
right.
you can get through a Ben & Jerry's container for 600 calories, and you can't finish. You eat one chicken breast, and there's no way you're going to eat another one. I mean, I eat chicken breast, and, you know, I can only eat so much protein at a time. I mean, I'm good for, I don't know, maybe 4 ounces, if that, at a time,
which
is not much. And that's not very high in calories, but it's the nature of the protein. Protein is very satisfying. It takes a lot of work for your body to digest it and incorporate it. It doesn't take much work at all for you to incorporate and ingest carbohydrates. So if you're worried about that belly fat, protein, fiber, and healthy fat, those are the things. And where do you get fiber? No, not from whole wheat. Whole wheat has too much carbohydrate, and it's just too inflammatory. Fiber comes from fruits and vegetables. And you get lots of fiber from fruits and vegetables, also nuts and seeds. And those are the places that we'd love to see you getting your fiber out of. Now, if you can eat beans healthfully, you can eat moderate amounts of beans. And they're also really high in fiber if you tolerate them. People don't always tolerate beans well. They can't always digest them. And it's interesting about beans and grains and nuts and seeds. When we put people on markedly anti-inflammatory diets, we take people off those things. Because the plant doesn't really want you eating the seeds. It's not an advantage to the plant if you crunch up an almond. If you crunch up an almond, it can't become a new almond tree.
It can't reproduce?
No. So there are things in nuts and seeds and beans that are not good for you. Who knew, right? And even quinoa. Quinoa has saponins in it. And so some people don't do well with quinoa, and they have to rinse their quinoa before they eat it. And if you want, we should try this sometime when we get the quinoa. We should try to rinse it, and you'll see this foamy, soapy stuff come off it. Those are the saponins.
Hmm.
Yeah, we don't do that. We should probably rinse the quinoa before I eat it. It doesn't bother me, so you just cook it up, and I eat it, and I'm fine. But because we don't rinse our quinoa, but we probably should. If you talk to somebody from Peru, if you talk to an Inca person from Peru or from Ecuador, they'll tell you, you don't rinse your quinoa. You're supposed to rinse it first. Why would you not do that? They all do it. They also know that if they throw the quinoa in the water, they're going to get fish. Kills the fish. It's an easy,
really?
It's a no-brainer way to fish. If you throw
plants. Oh, because it bloats.
I don't know. It's toxic to the fish,
really?
But not to you. Yeah. So if you throw plants with saponins in them in the water, like a soapwort. Soapwort is a classic plant that has a lot of saponins in it.
Mm-hmm.
You throw it in the water, and it makes the water toxic to the fish, so the fish will float up.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Okay, that's really weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, so that's a little aside there. But again, belly fat, reducing carbohydrates, keep your carbohydrates to a minimum. You have to figure out where your sweet spot is. How much starch and sugar can you get away with eating and still meet your goals? If you are really wanting to lose fat, a good goal to have is to lose 1 or 2 pounds a week. And a better goal to have is to not worry about it and let it happen naturally and focus on today. And that's why I really encourage tracking, because when you track, you see what you're doing. You're mindful about what you're doing. And you can see, like if you use any kind of fitness tracker, and there are good online fitness trackers. For example, you can use MyFitnessPal, you can use Lose It. If you have a Fitbit, it has a food tracker that goes along with it. And also if you're like, oh, but I don't want to spend all that time entering. You know what? If you get, if you develop a facility with any of those apps, it's really a no-brainer. The more you use it, the easier it is to use, because when you eat a food, the database, now it's then in the database. So if you start typing it up, it'll pop up for you. And so you're just checking boxes. It gets easier and easier to use. And if you ate a food and you find that it's not in the database, you can manually add it. If there's a barcode, you can take a picture of the barcode and it'll enter it for you. And then once it's in there, it's in there for everybody if it's because it's shared data, and you can tell it to share it or not. But why wouldn't you? You know, if I went and ate something that wasn't in the database, of course I want, you know, Joe in West Virginia to know about it. Why wouldn't I? So it's a nice thing to do. And as accurate as you can enter it is better. So once something's in the database, so if you track it, then you get an idea of not only the calories you're eating, but it'll give you macronutrients as well. How much protein, carbohydrate, and fat are you eating? And then you get to track that and see how well you're doing. And then you can look at that at the end of the day and say, this is what I did today. And you can have a feeling of satisfaction of that from that. And don't worry about, oh my God, I have to lose 10 pounds by such and such date. Because that's only going to make you nuts and sabotage you. It's much better to be happy, to have a program that you're going to do this week and plan it out, or, you know, to celebrate that, hey, today I ate a salad, I had eggs with vegetables for breakfast, and I had a pear with that. I had a snack of some almonds with some cheese, and I had a great lunch. I had some cold cuts, and I put on some sauerkraut and some dressing, and I had lettuce and tomatoes with that. And then for dessert, I made an apple crisp, and the apple crisp had a little bit of oats, but a lot of apples, and only a little bit of sweetener, and it was really good. And I had a great day today. I didn't go over my calorie goal or my carb goal, and I did really well. And not only that, I went out and I went for an hour walk. And you can celebrate that today. Don't worry about that you didn't lose any weight today, because if you keep having days like that consistently, I promise you'll have some movement. Not, you may or may not lose weight, but you probably will. But more than that, if you keep eating like that and you keep exercising like that, you're going to feel great regardless of what your weight is. And if you feel great and you're healthy, that's way more important than whatever you weigh and whatever your belly looks like. So that's the thing to focus on, is to be happy and healthy. But if you're worried about, if you want to, you know, fat loss is generally protein and produce, less, you know, managing your carbohydrates, eating carbohydrates in small amounts, eating nuts and seeds in moderate amounts, and eating dairy in also in as a garnish, really, as something that you season your food with, not as a, you know, huge blocks of cheese, and having it as a feature in your diet, have it as a garnish in your diet. So those are things that are helpful
for
your belly fat.
Something that our caller should understand too is that the weight loss industry is a $60 billion a year industry.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I am always looking up articles for health and fitness, and well, I get all these pop-ups for belly fat.
Yeah.
And
people
maybe,
are really ashamed of
it. You know, the belly fat thing is, you shouldn't get so, I mean, yes, you want to stay healthy. The key point is you want to stay healthy. But the, it's like the industry is shaming people into this belly fat thing.
Yes.
And six-pack abs and all this stuff. And you know.
That's very, very hard to attain, especially as you get older.
It is. And so, you know, just relax a little about it. And,
yes.
And, you know, I know it's not what you had when you were 20, but. You know,
you're not going to be 20, and accepting that is important, you know, because you can't do anything about it except it's like the serenity prayer. Grant me the strength to accept the things that I can't change, to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. That's important. And be here now, and refrain from arguing with reality. I have to shout out to Eliza Nokomis, who said that to me. Don't, if you argue with reality, why are we arguing with something that is? It is already.
Right.
So
right. That's what it is.
There is no climate change, really.
Well, we're not going there right now. We're not
going
to go there.
So you're listening to 91.7 FM WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch, and you have been listening to Radio Naturopath. And we will be back next week with more Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM.